episode 584 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Top Cow Thursday episode, and I'm going to be continuing with the Top Cow chronology by talking about Devil's Reign, Part 5. It's Wolverine Witchblade. The creative team, it's written by David Wall and Christina Z. We've got pencils by the incomparable Michael Turner. Inks are by D-Tron, colors by Jonathan D. Smith, and letters by Dennis Heisler. And I have to say that this is by far the best issue of the Devil's Reign crossover so far. For those not familiar, it is a crossover between two publishers, Top Cow and Marvel Comics. Came out in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, and it's all about Mephisto discovering that the Top Cow universe exists and realizing that there's no kind of lord of the underworld there, no one to fight over the souls of the dearly departed. And so he decides to head over there, conquer that universe, because he'll be much more powerful there, because again, he won't have to fight over anyone's eternal soul. He'll have them all to himself. So it's been a little bit of an up and down series so far, but between the fun writing of this one, the writing and storytelling is pretty strong. It's very consistent with the early issues of the Witchblade comic that we've covered so far in the chronology, and the Michael Turner art. Again, it's no comparison. This is by far the best chapter of the story so far. So before I get into this particular issue itself, a quick reminder of what the Top Cow chronology is. So it's not a publishing chronology. In other words, I'm not covering the books as they in the order they were published. I'm covering the whole artifact part of the Top Cow universe. So Witchblade, Darkness, Magdalena, and everything that ties in with any of that part of the universe. I'm covering them all chronologically. So that means the first issues we covered took place in ancient times, and we're moving forward into the modern day. So there is a link in the show notes to the chronology, which was put together by a user who goes by the name of Condor over at the Comic Vine website. So again, there's a link in the show notes. You can go, you can check it out. You can read ahead. You can go catch up on things in the past that we've covered. A lot of these books aren't that expensive. In fact, most of them aren't very expensive at all. Some of them are a bit harder to find. A lot of it is very much rooted in its 90s kind of feel, right? I mean, the 90s, the comics get kind of a bad rap, and they do have a certain feel. Maybe a little style over substance tends to be the case. So again, some better than others, but a focus on art and kind of skimpy clothing for the women and big splash pages, a lot of action. It was definitely defined by a certain feel, and a lot of these issues that we've read so far have that feel. But again, it's not to say that they're not entertaining, they're not fun to read. And as far as them being available in trade, there are trades and a lot of digital copies available in Comixology, and whenever they do a humble Top Cow does a humble bundle, a lot of this stuff is available really inexpensively. But there are some issues that are really hard to come by, and there's some issues that aren't available at all digitally. A lot of the Tomb Raider stuff, because Top Cow doesn't have the license for that stuff anymore, so that those issues can be hard to find. And some of this stuff is a little harder to track down, just because it's not worth very much, like I was mentioning. And because that, like when you're at a show, you may not find dealers that stock any of this stuff, just because it's not worth their time to carry it to the show, since it's worth so little. So a lot of times you can find a lot of this stuff digging through like bargain boxes, you know, dollar boxes, 50 cent boxes, 25 cent boxes, what have you. In fact, a lot of the Devil's Reign issues that I have, I pulled out of probably dollar or 50 cent boxes. So again, the stuff is out there. eBay is another source for it. But I really think digitally is the way to go to pick up a lot of this stuff. Like I said, you can find it pretty inexpensively on Comixology. So let me go ahead and dive into Chapter 5 of Devil's Reign here, Wolverine Witchblade. from cover date March 1997. And I'll start off by reading the story so far synopsis that we get inside the front cover of the issue. It says, Mephisto has come to Top Cow's dimension, bent on acquiring souls to make himself more powerful in his new home. Just minutes ago, he completed the first stage of his plan, taking thousands of New York revelers' souls to his new hell, leaving only Wolverine, his agent Zoe Culloden, and Cyberforce's renegade team member Ballistic behind in Times Square to wonder just what happened. But they don't have to wonder for long, because Mephisto has plans for Wolverine. But right now, he's more interested in the wielder of the Witchblade, NYPD Detective Sarah Pizzini. So as we turn to the first page, we see Wolverine talking about not being sure what happened. It's 5:20 a.m., and just 5 hours ago, the place was filled with thousands of people partying way too hard, maybe harder than humanly possible, because they had artificial assistance, from Mephisto, a guy who fancies himself as the incarnation of the devil. But unfortunately, he's got the power to back up that claim. So Wolverine and Zoe are trying to figure out just what happened. And Wolverine's thinking to himself how this city, this version of New York, seems so much like the one that he's from. The skyline and litter, hot dog stands, everything. But there's something about it that's not the same. So as we turn the page, we see Brooklyn Heights, 4:30 a.m. So this is we're actually 4:30 p.m. So we're much later in the day, and Sarah is talking about how different everything looks from the east side of the river. The last time she looked at that view was when she was fighting for her life on Liberty Island, and that's a reference to the first volume of The Witchblade, when she was coming to terms and learning about the Witchblade itself and what it was capable of, and how she got chosen as its wielder. Plus, she was fighting with Kenneth Irons, you know, discovering his duplicity, as well as Irons' agent, Ian Nottingham. So that's what that's in reference to. And if you're curious about it, again, go back and listen to the chronology episodes that cover that first volume of The Witchblade. So anyway, Sarah's like, it doesn't really seem that long ago, and it really wasn't. But her partner, Michael Yee, and Ken Irons and Ian Nottingham that I just mentioned, they're all just names now. They're just memories, because they're actually all dead, and the NYPD is investigating their deaths. And Sarah's not quite sure how to handle that. She can't exactly go to her commanding officer and say, oh, so there's this Witchblade thing, and that was the cause of death, and you know, here's what really happened. So anyway, she thinks regardless that she should stop by the station and see if she can have a one-on-one with the chief and try to explain, at least explain away what's going on, if not tell him the outright truth. So as she shows up at the station, she overhears her colleagues talking about somebody being released yesterday, and the bullet wounds are close to healed. And as she walks in, everybody's kind of clapping for her, saying, oh, the battle-wounded beauty returns. And they're saying, congratulations. And Sarah's like, what's going on? And the chief says, hey, Pizzini, get over here and report for duty. Time to quit slacking. You know, if there's even one pint of blood left in your body, the city still needs your services. But you better get yourself a new pair of jeans, because the ones she's wearing have a few rips in them. Because there's an award banquet tonight for her and Michael. And she's like, Michael who? And we see a voice off panel say, Michael who? How dare you? We turn the page and we see Michael Yee, back from the dead, apparently, and no worse for the wear. As he says, I thought that you couldn't forget this handsome face. And Sarah's just shocked. She's like, Michael, I don't know what. And everybody kind of chalks it up to Sarah's still recovering from her wound, as Michael himself is. He does have a bandage on his forehead, and he talks about the bullet having grazed his head, which we know that wasn't exactly the case. But Sarah's like, what's going on? You know, she's thinking to herself, I saw you die, the Witchblade. And as she thinks that, she holds up her wrist and looks down and sees it's a watch. And she's like, wait, what's going on? Am I dreaming? Bullet wounds? I was shot. Like, could this have been all a dream? And the chief says, well, you were in a coma for a couple days. Maybe you need to get some more rest. And Michael offers her a ride, but she declines. And meanwhile, Zoe and Wolverine have taken to finding some shelter, and they're trying to understand what exactly is going on. And Wolverine says, well, we've got to track down Mephisto, because no matter what's going on, the stench of his evil is so strong, I won't have any problem tracking him down. So Wolverine says, I'll go do that. And in the meantime, you need to get some reinforcements before it's too late, before Mephisto gets too powerful. So meanwhile, Sarah's gone home, I guess, but it's not really home. It's actually the Coddy building, which formerly was the home of Kenneth Irons. And it's just like she remembers it, sort of, because it's like no battle ever took place there, because this is where the climactic battle took place in Witchblade number 8, when she found out about what Kenneth Irons was really after, the Witchblade itself, as well as her fight with Ian Nottingham and Kenneth Irons. And there's no signs of the battle. The intricate window that looks out over the city and the chandelier are all as if nothing ever happened. The grand piano that got smashed to bits is completely restored. And Sarah's, again, she's questioning herself. She's like, I was in a coma for 2 days. Could I really have dreamt this all? It's just not plausible. And she thinks to herself, I know how I can prove it. I'll go check out the gallery that was in this penthouse where Kenneth Irons had all his Witchblade obsessed art, right? And that'll prove to me. And she goes to check it out, and the Witchblade artifacts are nowhere to be found. Statue of Joan of Arc is gone. Egyptian urn is gone. And she starts thinking, well, that makes sense. If Kenneth Irons never lived here, and it's a different person that, or someone else new moved in, and they would have gotten rid of that art. And she has heard that coma patients before they wake up or in a dream state that parallels reality right before they come out of it. And she's just, again, trying to make sense of what's going on. And she walks out onto the balcony, the same balcony that Ian Nottingham was thrown from and that Kenneth Irons jumped off of. And she's just like, I don't get it. And then there's a voice behind her that says, I got it. And I want more of it, as this figure grabs Sarah around the waist. And we see it's Ian Nottingham, also apparently back from the dead, no worse for the wear. And he kisses Sarah. She thinks, no, I don't have my gun. And as Ian Nottingham releases her, he says, I thought you'd be ready by now. You know, we have reservations in half an hour, and the seamstress has already dropped off your dress, and I really want to show off my girlfriend in front of my friends. And I'll even let you boss me around a little bit while you recover from your injuries. And so, you know, Sarah's trying to put this together, how this makes sense from the context of what he's saying. And she starts thinking, okay, if I'm his girlfriend, this makes more sense. I'm sure the doctor must have said something about my injuries could cause memory loss. You know, I could have dreamt this all up, this imaginary tale of the Witchblade and these people fighting for control of it. And, you know, my boyfriend, of course, would have been in the dream, and somehow I made him the enemy, and I made myself the hero of it, a woman with this supernatural weapon. And, you know, I wanted to keep it from my boyfriend's boss. And yeah, it's plausible. I wanted to be a hero. So yeah, this is making sense now. And so they head out for a night on the town, and Nottingham's talking about how he knows that her memories may take a little while to come back, and she should feel free to ask him anything. And she thinks to herself, well, maybe I should ask, didn't you try to kill me on Liberty Island? And didn't I watch you fall out of the terrace of our apartment? And she doesn't really ask that stuff. And since she asks how long they've been seeing each other, and Nottingham says, well, we're engaged, if that tells you anything. And you've got a gorgeous ring at home. And, you know, the doctors had to take it off before your surgery, but I was your martial arts instructor and you were my best student. And, you know, I twisted your arm to have dinner with me, and here we are. And so Sarah's thinking to herself, yeah, this makes sense. This sounds, you know, like kind of a normal life. And, as she's musing on this, all of a sudden Nottingham calls out to Sarah to get down. And we see Wolverine jump through the window of the restaurant saying, I don't know what your game is, bub, but you've got a bunch of innocent victims to answer for. Obviously, Wolverine's referring to those thousands of revelers that disappeared from Times Square. So Ian says, get out of here, Sarah. I won't let this creature get to you. And Wolverine's like, you're not fooling anybody. I know this is all fake. And no matter how you disguise yourself, your scent is so foul, I could track you down anywhere. And Sarah's like, Ian, what the heck's going on? And Nottingham, maybe betraying a little bit of his true identity, is using by his language, choice of words here, says, you little creature, how dare you interrupt my dinner? He pulls out Nottingham's swords, and we get a pretty cool fight between Nottingham and Wolverine. One thing is Wolverine has his bone claws at this time. So as Wolverine looks like he's just about to get the upper hand over Nottingham, Sarah jumps him from behind. And Wolverine's like, stop, lady. This is all fake. Look around you. Like, get off me. And Sarah realizes that none of the other diners are reacting to this. And she's like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. And as she's glances down at her watch, she notices it change from being a watch to being the Witchblade. And she's commenting to Wolverine that no one's acknowledging they're there, that Wolverine and Sarah are there, and there's this fight. And Wolverine's response is, that's because they're not real. Now get off me, because I've got half a mind to gut you right now, but I know you've just been fooled by this guy. And so Sarah's like, no, why can't I have a normal life for once? Instead, you're real. She thinks to herself as she looks down at the Witchblade on her hand. She says, it's all real. Damn, damn, damn. It's not what she wants. What she wants is for herself to have a normal life. What she wants is for her partner Michael Yee not to be dead. But that's simply not reality. And so Wolverine says, you better snap out of it, because whatever's going on in your head, you've been tricked by the greatest of them all. And if we don't act fast, and we get a... And as we turn the page, we see Nottingham turning into Mephisto right in front of their eyes, saying, you know, I really enjoy your scintillating utterances, Wolverine, but I'm bored now. And yes, Miss Pizzini, this has been just a show, but it was all for your benefit, I assure you. And you performed exactly as I expected you to, as did your co-star Wolverine. And Sarah, as she begins to manifest the Witchblade armor, says, who are you and why me? And the response is, well, I'm Mephisto. So Sarah's immediately on the offensive, says, you're going to suffer for what you did to me? And Wolverine agrees with that and says, hey, I'm with you, kid. Well, Sarah thinks to herself, you know, I thought I had learned my lesson. And the next time somebody tries to fool me and I want to believe some fantasy is true, I'm going to remember what my mother always said. If it's too good to be true, it usually is. So both Sarah, Witchblade, and Wolverine attack Mephisto, but you know, it's a physical attack and it doesn't really do much, right? I mean, he's far too powerful for that. And you can tell by the bored look on his face as he says, yes, make me suffer, show me what you and the Witchblade can do. And Sarah says, all right, let's do it. And she unleashes a very powerful blast of energy or fire force from the Witchblade. But of course, Mephisto just shrugs it off and says, well, that was very nice, Sarah. You know, you are perfect and beautiful and a great combination of passion, recklessness. And I love this Catholicism bred guilt, because Sarah's faith is a part of the story of the Witchblade. And it's something that makes her a little more real. And you can kind of understand, it kind of grounds her. And again, you can understand her being who she is and being in New York and, you know, having been raised as Catholic. So, and they do play around a little bit in the overall Witchblade story with the idea of faith. So I like that they threw that in there. And Mephisto goes on to say, you know, Wolverine here, he could learn from you. But, you know, I don't believe we've been properly introduced. My name is Mephisto. And perhaps you've heard of me. I'm the ruler of the underworld. And all I want, the only reason I'm here, is for your soul. That's what I'm here for. And he starts to grow in size, and we get next Witchblade Electra in chapter 6. So again, this is the most entertaining, as I said, chapter of the story so far, because it doesn't jump around, really. It's a very straightforward narrative. It doesn't feel like any chunks are missing. The pacing is very well done. And I think when it comes to the reason why so many of the chapters of Devil's Reign feel a little subpar is because the narrative is choppy. The pacing is not right. The story jumps around. They're trying to pack too much into these issues. And you can kind of understand it, because for something as ambitious as this story, with Mephisto going over to the Top Cow dimension, I mean, really could have been, you know, 20-something issues to really try to tell the big story that they're telling without, you know, missing out on narrative. That, or you just have to do more panels and more story, you know, more exposition to kind of understand exactly what's going on and the pieces being moved around the board and such. But that's not the style of comics that were made in the 90s. So you can understand why that didn't happen. Plus, I don't know that there was a quote unquote showrunner for this event, right? It was kind of like, all right, everybody, we're doing this, and it's crossing over into these books, and which weren't a lot, just a few books, and most of them were one shots, right? Where you're getting, you know, a character from Top Cow and a character from Marvel, and you're mashing them up, and you're getting some creative teams, and you're saying, okay, here's the overall story, here's the part of the story that you're going to tell, go. And I don't think there was somebody that was kind of overseeing the whole thing that was looking at it as, let's make this good and let's make the issues flow from one to the other. You know, I don't want to call it a cash grab, because I don't really think it was that. But remember, this was the time when Marvel was really hurting. You know, they were, it was around the time of their bankruptcy, and they, you know, they had almost gone under. And so they were looking for anything to kind of be a positive for them and boost sales. And it's hard to believe that Image was, you know, outselling Marvel at the time. And, you know, Marvel probably went to Top Cow and said, hey, can we do this? I don't really know the origins of the event. I'll have to maybe ask Mark Silvestri next time I see him. But it definitely was a way for Marvel to do something positive and to try to have a different presence and a different look on the stands. And that's a lot of what this event has to do. So I think, you know, so far from what I've read of it, it's much more successful as an idea rather than in execution. But we'll see, you know, as it finishes out here, what I think of it overall once we get done reading all the chapters. But I do think that this one works. And as far as the reason it works, again, it's just because there's a really strong creative team. You know, David Wall, Christina Z, the normal writers for the Witchblade title, plus Michael Turner as co-plotter and penciler. I mean, it's hard to go wrong with the strength and talent of that creative team. Plus, Sarah and Wolverine have a good chemistry. Even though we only get them interacting for a few pages, they have a very good chemistry within the story itself, and it comes across on the comic page. Plus, it's a natural team-up, like with the way Sarah wields the Witchblade, like the way it manifests itself. You know, she kind of has talons. Wolverine's got the claws. So they're very complementary characters in a way. And I think that that goes for their personalities as well. And that's probably why we do see them interacting so well. Like, you could completely buy Sarah and Wolverine going out on the town as drinking buddies, you know, going to sit in a bar somewhere, drink some beers, maybe get in a bar fight. Like, that's totally plausible. The way that Wolverine is and what we know from his personality, what we know of Sarah, it just feels natural that they would kind of get on like a house on fire. And so I really enjoy that. And it would be great to have a story like that. Like, hey, here's a throwback story. After the whole Devil's Reign event went down, here's what you didn't see. Here's, you know, Wolverine and Sarah going out on the town for a beer. So maybe we can get that story sometime from some great creative team. It would be great to see Michael Turner draw it, obviously, but unfortunately he's passed. But maybe V-Can Marion. Maybe I'll talk to V-Can about that, see if he feels like pitching that story. Of course, never going to happen, right? Marvel probably has no interest in a team up with Top Cow, and Top Cow probably has no interest in a team up with Marvel these days. But maybe fan fiction with some cool art from V-Can. I don't know. Anyway, I can dream, right? It's my podcast, so I'll do what I want. But I definitely would love to check out that story. So anyway, it's three issues to go, or three chapters, I believe, for the Devil's Reign crossover. It's eight in total. So we'll be covering issue, or chapter six, rather. I think next time, let me check the calendar really quickly. No, actually not until the end of the month will I be covering the next chapter, because as I look at the calendar here, next Thursday for Top Cow, we're going to be talking to the creative team for the upcoming Freeze title that's coming in December from Top Cow, which is a really intriguing story. I can't wait to check that out. And then the following Thursday, we're going to be talking a little Aphrodite 5, which I know I had promised that was coming sooner than later, but I postponed it because I'm trying to get Brian Edward Hill to come on to talk about that. So look for those two next. Freeze next Thursday, Aphrodite 5 the Thursday after that. And then the following Thursday should be the next chapter of the Devil's Reign crossover. So hope you're around to join me for all of those. As always, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially five-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the website, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.